Everybody, welcome into First Take on a Monday. Hope you all had a fabulous weekend. My guy, Stephen A. Smith, top of the morning to you. Max Kellerman, good to see you as always. I'm Molly Karen Rose. And Stephen A., yes, you too. You teased it. We're going to get into that Lakers-Nets game from Saturday night because there's plenty to discuss there. But first, fellas, I got some good video for you, so let's watch this for a hot second. So during Hornets and Hawks contest yesterday, Miles Bridges with the nasty poster dunk on Clint Capella. Some are calling it the dunk of the years, fellas. Stephen A., what do you think? Is this the best dunk that we've had this season?
Without question, this is the dunk of the year. This is the dunk of the year. On a defender like Clint Capella, who's no slouch defensively or whatever. I mean, to just get posterized like that, that was just nasty. Miles Bridges got hops. He's a showman. This dude, I mean, he will dunk it on anybody. His hops is off the chain, and you just fantasize about seeing him with LaMelo Ball on the court for years to come because of what they can do in the open court. That was clearly the dunk of the year. I know Anthony Edwards is in the mix. He's a candidate and a couple of others. But they, you know, hey, De'Aaron Fox over the weekend and what he did, one of his dunks over Rudy Gobert. I get all of that, but this is the dunk of the year without question.
Nope. It's Anthony Edwards, Stephen A. I understand that he put Clint Capella on a poster, and that means something. But forget about all that. I'm talking about from this season what I'm going to remember. Like, I know I'm going to remember Anthony Edwards' dunk. That's one of the best in-game dunks I've ever seen. By the way, I mean, he goes baseline. No, it ain't on Clint Capella, but look where his head is. Look where his head is. A dude that, how many times in the history of the game has a dude gotten his head that high on a defender in an NBA game? That's ridiculous. And by the way, because it's Anthony Edwards, because this dude was the number one overall pick and really wasn't playing well until that dunk. And since that dunk, he's been playing at a very high level. Like, it was like a turning point in the season. And I'm saying, like, I get it, Bridges, the way he, you know, the fact that it was on Capella, it looked great and everything. But we're going to see other dunks like that. I think that dunk is going to get lost in a bunch of dunks. This dunk is the one I'm going to remember out of the season. By the way, Paul George had a great dunk on a tired Pistons team that was playing the second of back-to-back on the road. But he had a great dunk. There are lots of great dunks throughout the course of this season. That's the best one, Anthony Edwards.
Figures for you to sit up there and say, like, you know what, we'll remember Anthony Edwards' dunk, but we wouldn't remember Miles Bridges' dunk. That just shows that your basketball acumen is somewhat limited at times. Something's wrong with you, Max Kellerman. Something's wrong with you. For you to sit up there and say that we're going to remember Anthony Edwards, but not Miles Bridges, we're just going to forget about that dunk on Clint Capella like that? Okay, that's your opinion. I have to respect it, even though I really don't. But the bottom line is that there's no way on earth that particular dunk is going to be forgotten. When we talk about the 2020-21 season, I assure you that dunk will be just as remembered, if not more so, than Anthony Edwards. You can sit up there and debate it one or two, but let me assure you, nobody's forgetting that dunk from Miles Bridges for years to come. I promise you that.
They may remember it. I'm not for sure I'm going to forget.
Clint Capella.
It was on Clint Capella.
And by the way, what about the landing? What about the landing? Because, you know, Anthony Edwards did fall because the guy was under him, and he did fall on the ground. Yeah, Miles Bridges didn't fall. He was standing. Yeah. Here
and
I am.
Bridges had more violence in the dunk. It's a great dunk. I'm not saying we're going to forget it. I'm saying, I don't know. Like, there are lots of great dunks. Anthony Edwards. But when I watched Bridges, I didn't think that's one of the best dunks I've ever seen. When I watched Edwards, and I think a lot of people were thinking this, immediately you're like, where does that place in among the greatest in-game dunks I've ever seen? There was something transcendent about it, like the dude is athletically different. Stephen A., how tall is Anthony Edwards that his head is over the rim dunk?
That would be true, but I would also ask you this. You barely see the individual. I mean, he rolls over that individual, okay? You don't even see his head or his face in the screen when Anthony Edwards is dunking. You see Clint Capella there. I mean, wide open. I mean, he's right there in
the
3D getting yammed on, okay? Getting posterized. That would be the difference here as well.
He had a more name. He dunked on a more name brand dude, but a more name brand dude had a better dunk, and that's Anthony Edwards.
Okay. You're wrong, but it's all right. It's okay. It's
all right, fellas, let's keep it rolling. Bridges had 59 dunks so far this season, and we're still counting. But let's get back to Saturday night, because I was a little confused about this game. Not what I expected, and we got a lot to unpack. I was thinking about you guys as I was watching it. So if you at home were also baffled by the Lakers-Nets score, a potential finals preview we had on ABC, L.A. beat up Brooklyn in BK by 25. Yes, without LeBron or Anthony Davis. Meanwhile, the Nets had Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant was back, but no James Harden. Max, I realize KD was on a minutes restriction. I realize Kyrie was ejected, but still, we didn't expect this. What concerns you most about Brooklyn?
Well, let's put injury and health aside for a second, because you could say that about every team, right? We talk about that with the Lakers, with the Nets. What concerns me the most is this. Remember last week, Stephen A., when we were debating who the most important player on the Brooklyn team is, on the Nets is? And I'm not going to say, like, KD is the best player on the team. I'm not arguing that. Kyrie is the most spectacular. Harden's the most important. Look, I know, as Molly said, KD's on a minutes restriction. He was very efficient. Kyrie gets tossed, was beginning of the third quarter. I get it. The fact of the matter is, this team, because they were losing when Kyrie got tossed. Like, they were down in the game. James Harden showed up to a team he hadn't played on earlier this season, fat and out of shape, looking like a hot mess, and was a walking triple-double with 30 points in wins. Like, Harden organizes that offense and makes that team basically unbeatable when he's on the floor. They were almost unbeatable without KD. You take Harden off that team, it is simply not the same. There's no one more important on that team than Harden. Now, why does that concern me the most? Kyrie is a proven playoff performer. I've seen Kyrie perform at MVP levels in the finals. We've also seen that from KD. And while Harden might be able to do that, and while he's trending in the right direction, his play is getting better when it matters most. What we've seen consistently in his career is when it matters most, he's no longer James Harden. That's the problem for the Nets, other than health, of course. If Harden somehow can't rise to the occasion in the playoffs, that could be an issue for the Nets. Otherwise, if this team is healthy, nothing can stop them. Harden, what last night told me, Harden, or this weekend, is the most important player on Brooklyn.
Harden is a league-leading MVP candidate. He's been spectacular this year. We all know, I know that KD is the most important player, not just the best player on the team, because the bottom line is this. They can win the title with KD and Kyrie. They can win the title with James Harden and KD. They cannot win the title without KD, but with Harden and Kyrie. It's just that simple to me. That's number one. Number two, what is my biggest concern with the Brooklyn Nets? It is Kyrie Irving. Because in the aftermath of this loss, we've learned he's not going to play again tonight because he has personal reasons to do so. Look, here's the reality. I'm not trying to – whatever's going on in Kyrie Irving's personal life, it's his business. He missed a couple – three games or so earlier this year because of a family matter. Obviously, he was gone for two weeks. He said he needed a break and, you know, violated COVID-19 safety protocols or whatever and ended up missing, additional seven games. And then after that, got fined for the two games. The reality is, when are we going to start talking about that? When are we going to start talking about that? I mean, from a temperamental perspective, the dude doesn't appear to be that reliable. We know he's spectacular. We know he's a superstar talent. I think he's the best show in the NBA. He is absolute positively box office. But this is not a guy that seems to have a consistent commitment to wanting to play. Now, I don't know that to be true. All I know is what we're seeing. Once again, this is going to be 15 years. Already missed 15 games this year. It's about to be 16 tonight. What the hell is going on? You only played 20 games last year in Brooklyn. Okay, you didn't play in the bubble. Then you come out of, you didn't want people to play in the bubble because you wanted folks to focus on other issues. And it turns out you got your own issues, whatever they may be. And so we wish him and his family and everybody, nobody's wishing anything negative about them. Nobody's doing that. We all hope that everything and everybody is okay. But I don't recall Kyrie at any point saying, here's your money back. You know, you don't have to pay me. But you're missing games at your discretion. I mean, how many personal days do you need? You don't play every day. You got 72 games this year instead of 82. You only played 20 of the 72 last year. What the hell is going on? Where you just missing games? Because let me tell you something. Continuity and chemistry do matter. Yes, you can give them the ball and they can do what they want to do as individuals when you're going up against most teams in the NBA. But what about the elite teams? What about the Lakers, who didn't have LeBron and AD, and watch Ben McLemore come off the bench straight off the street and drop 17 on you Saturday night? Andre Drummond dropping 20 and 11. I mean, the Lakers ain't going away. Denver's not going away. The Clippers are not going away. Milwaukee and Philadelphia's not going away. At some point, the level of continuity and chemistry has to come into play. And when you're just missing games and literally saying, well, you know what, I just need personal days. I mean, damn. See, this is where the rookie coach that is Steve Nash comes into play. Because if that were one of the more experienced coaches, you think you're getting away with that? You think you're getting away with that? You're just going to take games off on three separate occasions in the same season. This ain't Dennis Rodman years ago, as was revealed in The Last Dance, Max, where he needed a break. So Phil calls Jordan into the office, and Jordan's like, if anybody need a break, I need a break. What the hell he need a break for? But they let him take it, and then Jordan had to go to the room and tell Carmen Electra, move out the way. Dennis Rodman, let's go. This ain't that. There's three separate occasions in the same season, a little bit more than 50 games in, where this brother has taken time off. Ain't getting money back, though. But he's taking time off. When is somebody going to say something about that? That's all I'm saying.
You knew where I was going with the Dennis Rodman thing for sure, because Dennis Rodman had certain issues. But he was a very valuable player when he was on the court, and Michael Jordan knew it, and Michael Jordan needed him, right? So Dennis Rodman can get away with it.
Nobody's saying to throw Kyrie off.
Players like that in every sport, Stephen A. I think about our Yankees back in the day. David Wells would go and party all night, show up the next day, still, you know, wasted basically, and pitch a perfect game. Like, some guys got it like that, and you
Hold
put
it.
Up with certain things.
Hold
yeah.
it, Max.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
showed
I know
up.
He showed up.
He
yeah,
showed
I,
up.
I get it. I'm just pointing
That's
out.
That's what we're saying.
That when you are especially talented, the rules don't always apply to you the same way they apply to a role player. Let me say this. On principle, I agree with you in the sense that your point is legit. On principle, it's legit. Kyrie, boy, you're taking a lot of time off, man. Like, what's going on? You know, and you said it right. Like, we hope everything's fine with your family. But even if you're having family issues, at a certain point, while we can all acknowledge that's more important, we do have to assess you professionally. And if it's taking away from your professional work, then we comment on that. And people say, yeah, but you're not reliable professionally, even if your priorities in a larger sense are in order. As basketball fans, as observers, we could say, that ain't helping anything. But Stephen A., when you get past the principle and actually look at what effect will this have on the Nets, that's where we disagree. Had I not seen what I saw earlier this season, I'm with you 100%. Like, yep. You can't just, you know, walk off the street and throw it all together and beat the Lakers, let alone the Bucks and the Sixers and all these teams in the East and then whoever comes out of the West. But you know what I saw? Without KD even, this is why I go back to James Harden. Harden's basketball brilliance this year has been so far off the charts that they were basically the best team in basketball before Harden and KD even got to know each other on the court without KD. I thought that just don't, like when you say they couldn't win a title together, I'm not positive about that. But I'll tell you this much, when you add KD with continuity or without continuity, if those three guys are healthy, good luck stopping them. Good luck stopping them. Put us all on a lie detector test and say, who wins the title if all three are healthy? What are we going to say?
Your point is irrelevant because I never said that they weren't win. I'm the one that picked them to win the chip. You jumped on the bandwagon 4 months later. I'm the one that picked them to win the chip. You were the one worried about their defense. This is not about that. What I'm saying to you is that at some point in time when you look at a dude, it's like, what the hell is going on? Because, see, I take it a bigger principle. And this is where you and I part ways like the Pacific Ocean, my brother. Here's the deal. I care about the regular season. I'm talking about from a fan's perspective, from an interest perspective in the league. I don't believe you get paid just to win the championship. It should be a priority for you. You shouldn't go out there and not care about winning. You should be in pursuit of the championship, true. But the salary that you get paid and the interest that you want to garner from the public is predicated on them seeing you often. And when you missing, and when you're missing games on several occasions, Max, if he was gone for 3 weeks, Max, we would be like, oh, we hope everything's fine. We'll see him when we get when he gets back because we're thinking something happened. You needed this time to handle
happening.
It, and that's it. But it's one time after another, where you just taking breaks. And I'm
not
like,
debating that point.
I understand that, but I'm saying to you, that's my point, because ultimately, those are the kind of things that are going to hurt the league. You cannot have a star that is that sporadic and that unreliable where, okay, I'm just going to take time off and all of that other stuff and think that's not going to come back to bite the league in the you-know-what. You can't do that.
What I start
that's
by
what
saying,
I'm saying.
I started off by saying that's legit. On principle, that's legit. I can't debate that. Because at a certain point, even I, who don't care so much about the regular season, at a certain point, if a dude just murks, right, like for weeks at a time and you don't know when and all of a sudden, that's not good for the league. I'm not debating that. You went on to say continuity in terms of winning. That's what I'm debating. I'm saying that we can stand on principle. You can. I can even agree with you. Others can agree with you. But once we start making the competition point, what I'm saying is, what I saw this season, it's the reason I didn't pick him right away. I wanted to see him play together. From what I've seen this season, good luck anybody beating a healthy Nets squad. Whether Kyrie comes in and out in the regular season, any of that stuff. Long as KD is healthy and Harden's running that offense, I don't see how to beat these dudes.
And I don't
That's my
how,
point.
And I don't see how a bunch of people can defend it, because let me tell you something. If KD is healthy, KD ain't taking time off like that. If James Harden is healthy, James Harden ain't taking time off like that. If LeBron James is healthy, LeBron James ain't taking time off about that, because they understand what really, really matters and what contributes to winning.
There's a reason Kyrie is not in MVP conversations, right? Like Damian Lillard is, Kyrie isn't. No one's more talented than Kyrie.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. It's no secret that the Aaron Rodgers relationship with Packers brass has not always been peachy. Example, they traded up and drafted another quarterback in the first round instead of getting him help last season. It's also no secret that his future is uncertain in Green Bay. Rob Domofsky of ESPN reporting that an unnamed agent suggested that the Packers are refraining from making free agent moves until something is done with Rodgers' contract. Here's the quote. I don't know who's really calling the shots there, but it's screwing the Packers in a lot of ways right now because there's just no cap space. They've called me about one of my players and said, hey, this is where we are now. And until we get something big done, hint, hint, we don't have any space. It's kind of like a lose-lose situation right now. We never want lose-lose. Jeff Saturday knows this. Jeff, good to see you as always, sir. In case people don't know, he played with Aaron Rodgers for 1 year. Yep, you always think about him and Peyton Manning, Super Bowls, but there was the year with Aaron Rodgers. Jeff, I will get to you in a hot second, but I'm starting with Stephen A. Stephen A., what should your boy Rodgers want to do now?
If I was him, I'd want out of Green Bay. Me personally, I bet on a record. I've stated that on many occasions, and I state that now. because I don't think it's just a football situation. Jeff Saturday, if I'm thinking about just football, of course I don't want to leave because I understand that I've been in back-to-back NFC Championship games. I'm knocking on the door of a Super Bowl berth, and we've got a decent squad. I'm talking about the fact that you can go elsewhere and still bring that level of success to somebody else, particularly since you just saw what Tom Brady achieved. And the thing about it is, when we think about Aaron Rodgers, who's that bad man that he is something spectacular. He is something special. We all know it. But he is somebody that has been grossly underappreciated by the Green Bay Packers. Oftentimes, I don't know how many times, Jeff, I've come on this show and I've stated that years ago, Aaron Rodgers walked into the office and talked to them, whether it was Mark Murphy or Ted Thompson at the time before Gutekunst came into play. And they basically told him to shut up and play football. You play football, we run the show. Go do your job. And that's it. That's the level of disrespect and dismissiveness that they threw in his direction. And he's never forgotten it. Now, maybe he'll admit it one day and he'll open up to people about it. Maybe he won't. He won't. But I happen to have heard religiously on several occasions that that's exactly what happened to him. And then the move up in the draft to draft his successor, when clearly you're looking at a guy that has a number of years left in him. Everybody wants to talk about him playing a chip on his shoulder and all of this other stuff. It's not just about the money. It's about you having an imprint and an impact on the roster around you. Last year, when he threw two passes to Tavon Austin, it was the first time in Aaron Rodgers' career that he had thrown to a first-round wide receiver. Think about that for a second.
Right.
This dude has been in the league since 2005. He's been a starter since 2008 and had never thrown a pass to a first-round wide receiver until last year when he threw two passes to Tavon Austin. They haven't prioritized surrounding him with the personnel on the offensive side of the ball. There's been numerous years there with question marks about their running game. Obviously, when you look at Devontae Adams, he's a stud. He'd be big time with or without Aaron Rodgers. But you know, DeMarcus Valdez-Scantling, the Alan Lazards, and others. There's a question mark as to whether or not that would be the case. What have you given him? And then to treat him like he's, you're just one of the other players on the roster. Go out there and do your damn job. When you have spent so many years asking him to carry this franchise on his shoulders, and to dismiss him and to treat him that way, it goes beyond the sport of football. So here's what I would propose to the Green Bay Packers. We talk about a league MVP. We're talking about a guy who is spectacular, surefire, first ballot Hall of Famer. Has anyone taken into consideration, since the Green Bay Packers are talking about being cap strapped because his salary is so exorbitant and there's been no restructuring and we had to have like six guys whose deals we had to restructure, et cetera, because we're limited in cap space. Has anybody entertained Jeff Saturday, Max Kellerman, what you could potentially get for Aaron Rodgers? Has anybody thought about that for a second? I mean, could you imagine the farm that you could get for Aaron Rodgers? Do you know how many teams would be knocking on your door? We've talked about the young stud that is Deshaun Watson when he wanted to leave the Houston Texans, what they would give up for him. We've debated that about, to a lesser degree, the Sam Darnolds of the world and others. No one has taken the time to sit back and say, what if the Green Bay Packers said, we're taking phone calls on Aaron Rodgers. Well, could you imagine what they could get for him? So since you got a guy, Max, that in Jordan Love, that you believe in and is the successor, and you think you got the other pieces around you, and it's all about the organization, not about this guy that's been carrying the franchise, I double dare the Green Bay Packers to sit up there and say, we'll take calls.
They're not going to do that now.
You're damn right they're not going to do it.
But you know what? They might do it, but they might do it next year. Like, the reason they don't want to restructure is because it's harder to trade him if they restructure. Look, the Packers want to have their cake and eat it too, no doubt. And if you're looking for a villain in this, it ain't Aaron Rodgers. We agree about that. But what should he want? He should want a big contract for the Packers. And I'll tell you why. I know everyone points to Tom Brady. Look, there's another way to do it. Tom Brady was dealing with a cupboard is bare situation in New England, right? There wasn't a lot of talent on that team, and he saw greener pastures. Aaron Rodgers is not in the same situation. Like, Aaron Rodgers, you could talk about what it was like in the past, even now, I won't disagree with you, even in the later years of Mike McCarthy. They got rid of Mike McCarthy, and they brought in a young coach where in Aaron Rodgers' first season, before he even knew what he was doing in the system, they won 13 games and beat Russell Wilson's Seattle Seahawks in the playoffs. In their second season together, they won another 13 games and played in the NFC Championship game without his starting tackle. And by the way, should have won. Like Aaron, let's be honest. Aaron Rodgers blundered in that game. He had daylight to the end zone. He didn't take it. And then coach blundered even bigger. But they had a chance to win and go to the Super Bowl where, given the Chiefs' injuries, they'd have won the Super Bowl, I think. So they're right there and improving year over year, only 2 years together, Rodgers and LaFleur, Rodgers and his coach. Now think about this. If he was a quarterback on another team, Rodgers, and he was having issues and he wanted out, and we surveyed the landscape, where would Aaron Rodgers go? We'd be like, ooh, the Green Bay Packers. If only they had a quarterback. They're ready to win now. Like, what don't they have, especially after this draft, since all the draft capital is going to be used to improve the team now, since they already have Jordan Love, right? We'd be like, the Packers, that's a great fit. But they have him already. So why would they move him now, at least? They wouldn't. And they shouldn't. And Rodgers, when he's looking around, is in a great situation there, even though I get it about the hurt feelings. I get it. That's not wrong. Have they treated him exactly right? No. But they were excellent right away when LaFleur got there. They've gotten better year over year. They should get even better in this draft. And on top of all that, guys, if he wins one more Super Bowl in Green Bay, then he's undisputed greatest quarterback in franchise history. Because, I think he's better than Favre, but Favre is still there, right? They each got one apiece. It's one of the original eight franchises. It really is America's team. It's the Lombardi Trophy. You know, the Packers from the there's something so good about doing your whole career in Green Bay, especially if you're set up to win Super Bowls now better than you've ever been set up to win Super Bowls in your career if you just stay put. Now, are the Packers screwing this up? Sure. But what should Rodgers want? Rodgers should want them to get it together and give him a big, fat contract to stay put.
You know, here's what I would say, Max. If this was 5 years ago, I would tend to agree with you, right? Is that you have a chance right now with Green Bay. They're in their, quote, Super Bowl window. They have all the pieces and parts. They're right on the edge. They're all that. But now we're seeing teams basically change, you know, overnight. You saw Tampa and the revamping of what they did. You saw the Patriots just spend a ton of money in free agency. We don't know what it's going to look like, but you're seeing teams kind of fall in love with making sweeping changes. If I were Aaron Rodgers today, the first call I would make would have been to the San Francisco 49ers, right? Let me go play for Shanahan. Let me go out there with John. But you're going to win. You know you're going to win, right? I mean, and here's the crazy part. They just traded two first-round picks for a maybe, right? For a maybe Mac Jones, for a maybe Justin Fields, for maybe Trey, whatever that looks like. And they're in position to win right now. There are other teams in the NFL that are going to be right on the cusp as well where he could step in and do those things. And to your point about how good they have been with a new coach, that all stems from him being there. I totally agree with you in his first year as a system or whatever it was, but they're good because of him, not in spite of him. And if they decide to move on to Jordan Love and make that move, maybe Jordan Love's a great player. He's not going to be as good as Aaron Rodgers is this year.
Why they're not going to move on right now.
He's not going to be as good as Aaron Rodgers is next year, and he's not going to be the following year. I mean, in all honesty, he's not going to be that good, right? So if you're Aaron Rodgers, wherever you go, is going to be a contender because that's how good you are. And if they build around you and give you all the pieces and parts, the problem for me is Green Bay has literally done this to themselves. And for the life of me, I don't understand the concept of why you wouldn't have at least put it out there. We are trying to extend him. We are trying to get him done. We're having conversations. We're doing, but all these things that Stephen A. brought up, they're all good points because to a guy who was a bit, kind of pushed down early on his career and had to wait his turn and the way the draft turned out for him, he does play with a chip on his shoulder and he does play with a very nasty competitive spirit. But when you're looking at this, man, like, he's done with it. I mean, and that's ridiculous because had he stayed there, this team is in the hunt 2 or 3 years from now because of Aaron Rodgers. That's the part I don't understand. And the problem is, if for Green Bay, is he just watched a guy go to a new team and do it in a season. So he believes he can do the same.
But see, the thing that resonates with me, guys, especially, and Jeff, here's where I'm at with this. What really resonates with me is the fact that, again, like you said, they're good because of him. not in spite of him. And so when you have somebody that spectacular in any other line of work, when we see it could be the NFL, it could be Major League Baseball, it could be the NBA. When you have a superstar, you know what you say? What can we do to support him? Because he's the guy. Green Bay hasn't done that with Aaron Rodgers. That's what Aaron Rodgers' problem is. They want to treat him like you're just another guy. And that's not right.
Yeah.
And that's where he should say enough's enough. Get me up out of here then. Because you don't treat a guy of that caliber that way. You don't
you
do
start
that.
Start changing the way you yeah. treat him.
I feel like drafting Jalen Hurts should have been his last straw. Pack it up and go to greener pastures. Show him what you got. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, fellas. Today we kick off First Take's Draft Blitz, a preview of the 2021 NFL Draft. I've ever told you how much I love the draft. One of my favorite sporting events. So we start with the team who won the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, the Jacksonville Jaguars. They own the top overall pick, the 25th selection in the first round. Urban Meyer now leads the team that has only 12 wins over the last three seasons. And gentlemen, let me just clean this up here real quick. When we were talking about the Packers, I accidentally said Jalen Hurts. Yeah, I meant Jordan Love. Obviously, it was the same draft, same thing when they did the same deal to Carson Wentz. But more egregious with Aaron Rodgers because it's Aaron Rodgers and it was the first round. Stephen A., do you think their expectations, how high they should be for Trevor Lawrence in year one?
Well, listen, I don't know what to make of this. What I can tell you is that in the interest of full disclosure, I don't give a damn about the Jacksonville Jaguars. I've never thought much about them. You win the opening game against the Indianapolis Colts last year, 27-20, and you proceed to lose 15 straight games at the end of the season. And so I'm looking at it and I'm saying there's nowhere to go but up. Trevor Lawrence, I think that ultimately I view him and I say the potential is there for him to overachieve because guess what? We're looking at him. We know he can ball. We know he can throw the football. He's got good size, great size on him, great arm. The weapons that he's going to have to throw available to him remains to be seen. DJ Chark and Cole and these guys. James Robinson can run the football. He's a 1,000-yard rusher, averaging 4.5 yards per carry last year. And you got Urban Meyer, who I think is one of the great, great, great football coaches we've ever seen. And so as a result of that, I'd say if I had to bet my money on Trevor Lawrence, it would be that the high expectations are legitimate primarily because of who his coach is and the fact that he's in a division where right now you look at the Tennessee Titans, sure, but you look at the Houston Texans, they're a mess. The Indianapolis Colts, Carson Wentz is a question mark. We'll see what happens. So I think to some degree he's playing with house money. That's really all I have to say about it.
The expectations for Trevor Lawrence in year one are not as high for me as they are for Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer, to me, is the guy, like, okay, now you got an NFL team. I like what they've done so far, Stephen A. They spread the money around in free agency. They have a lot of money to spend. They still have some. Instead of, like, bringing in stars right away, they had a lot of holes to fill. They just got competent players and brought them in, right? They have a ton of draft capital, too. So I like what I'm seeing that direction so far. And I think Urban Meyer's the guy, like, okay, fine, these aren't college kids, you know? This is a whole different ballgame. Can you succeed in the pros? As far as Trevor Lawrence is concerned, I think by the end of this season, he has to look like a starting quarterback. Year two is the development year for a quarterback. By year three, you got to make the playoffs. And in year four, you should be advancing in the playoffs, right? Like, that was what, when you look at a number one overall pick, what the expectations are. Now, Trevor Lawrence is not just a number one overall pick. He's considered the best prospect. Remember, prospect doesn't always mean it turns out to be the best quarterback. But the best prospect since Andrew Luck, who took over a team which really was ready to win, except, like, you know, with Peyton Manning, they were excellent, and suddenly there's no Peyton Manning, right? Remember back then, sucked for Luck, right? And now, so now you put a competent quarterback back in, and they can have double-digit wins. And Andrew Luck was tremendous. There have been better quarterbacks than Andrew Luck, but he was tremendous right out of the gate. Does Trevor Lawrence have to be that? I don't think so. When I look at the modern game, first of all, there's a direct comparison. He's having a lot of off-the-field problems right now, legal issues. Deshaun Watson, they're very serious. But two Clemson quarterbacks, you know, national champions. Deshaun Watson didn't do anything his rookie year. He played in six games. He was okay. And then the next year took the step forward. That's what, like, that's a comp. Patrick Mahomes played one game his rookie year and then was the best thing I've ever seen by his second year. I think the expectations for Trevor Lawrence should be he's going to get in some games and right away, of course. He's got to look like he's a starter to stay by the end of the season. And then next year, we got to see the development. That's what I'd say the reasonable expectations are for Lawrence. Now, I'd rather compare him to Watson and Mahomes if he's going to have a great future than, say, Baker Mayfield, who's fine, number one overall pick and played right away, right? Or Sam Darnold, who just got traded and hasn't worked out so far. I don't think it's so important that he hit the ground running and is great as soon as he's a rookie. I do think it's important that Urban Meyer show right away that he knows what he's doing at this level. And I'd say the early returns are good. One win, as you said, Stephen A., what do they have to do? Win four or five games, and that's a tremendous improvement.
Well, listen, how about not losing 15 straight? That's a good starting point. How about that? That would definitely help. I'm looking at them right now. They brought over Marvin Jones from Detroit. They brought up Philip Dorsett over, from Seattle. I'm just looking at some of these guys that they've got here. Yeah, these are guys that can play, make no mistake about it. You know what I'm saying? But difference makers, it remains to be seen. I think you're right in pointing out Urban Meyer. He has to have that kind of imprint and impact on the play of Trevor Lawrence. He's got to be healthy. I love his size. I loved his mobility when I saw him in the national championship game against LSU. Obviously, I look at his mobility, even though he didn't, struggled a little bit this season at times compared to what we've seen from him the previous year. So, but we know he's big time, and we know he's worthy of being number one overall. And I think that this is a can't miss pick. So I expect him to show some promise. But again, the fact that he's coming to a team fresh off a 1-15 season in which you spent your one opening day and then lost 15 straight games, I think anything he gives you is butter. Anything he gives you is a plus, and that's how I view it.
Well, the thing I like about Trevor Lawrence, not only as the first time he gets to start, basically, he looked better than Deshaun Watson did the year before winning the championship, right? He looked amazing, right? That's why we're all so hot. But the way he carved up Alabama was ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. And especially at his age. Now, I wouldn't say his trajectory has matched the early returns, but I did see him even the next year. He'd throw an interception, make a tackle in an open field. He's a really good athlete. With a really good arm and a really bright future on a team, Stephen A., that is poised if they make the right choices right now to be really good. They have a lot of draft capital.
Could you go? Yeah, fine. But could you go back and look at the tape of Deshaun Watson the year Clemson beat Alabama for the national title? The year before that when they lost in the national championship.
Yeah, he was even more impressive than that.
I wouldn't say that Trevor Lawrence looked better than that. And not those two games.
I would say when they beat Alabama, and maybe it's a function of how much better Clemson was, but Trevor Lawrence carved them up. It was not a close game. Maybe that's the entire Clemson team, but that wasn't close. Deshaun Watson it was like a miracle play at the end, and he was amazing. Trevor Lawrence just carved them up.
Yeah. Right. And congrats to Trevor Lawrence, who got married over the weekend. But Stephen A. really likes how he flips his hair. He's actually jealous.
Well, he's going to have hair commercials. I mean, he's got hair commercials coming out the wazoo. Nobody will have more hair commercials than him. Nobody. Trevor Lawrence will have all the hair commercials. Him and Troy
better perform, Molly. We're going to be hearing Stephen A. talking about he has more hair commercials than wins. You know that's next.
Oh, boy. Yes, yes.
You got to work on resonating with your jokes, man. Sometimes it's a little corny.